Como estamos en intercessão, se me diz uma coisa, eu vou fazer a leitura de uma coisa que me acontece. E outra de problemas que eu tenho a dizer. Essa é a ideia que eu tenho. Se onde o professor funciona na cidade, é o início da terra que eu sou de imediato. A pessoa que eu leio em mim, que eu tenho um bom, 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 que between being human crossing and social parapoli, there is no borderline there. It's only what you call certain areas, what you have, what is called colored sense for foot and mouth, only just control the movement of animals. But there's no borderline fence there. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if we'll ever be in a position to control these things because I show up like that. We'll go to Swaziland and come back. A simple answer. There is this thing called Kando. It's a color? Yeah. Go in, come back. Anyway, can we have the presentation from the National, from the Department of Home Affairs?
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. So maybe what I thought I'll do is to share some of the slides first that I've marked given to the committee. And then I'll end up with what you have, so that can be quick with that one. So let me make I'm not sure how to say this diplomatically, but a lot of the information in this slide shares classified information. So I'm just asking you to include the information in that manner. But the real purpose of this slide is to give honourable members a sense of how we assess the problem from a national perspective. And I think the committee took a very wise decision to let's see how what happened on the ground, and now let's see how we're analysing it from a national perspective. So this slide simply shows us the dots, the green dots, shows us where all our border posts are, land border posts. It shows us also where our international airports are, you can see in red. And it also shows us in blue where our harbors are that can deal with international traffic. So that's, if you like, the kind of national picture with regard to port of entry. Go to the next slide, please. So, if you come to point three, let me just quickly look at point three. Obviously, we've got more latest statistics, but in the year 2012, there were about 36 million people that moved through our borders, officially through our ports of entry. That number, I think, has gone up to about 39 million in 2014. And we also know that the overwhelming majority of people that moved through our borders, the second border here, they are foreign nationals, people with a different nationality. We also know that in 2012 we had about 4.3 million containers moving in and out of our country, and the number of transactions linked to export and import were over 5 million. So that those few bullets give members a sense of the extent of people moving across our borders, and also it gives members a sense of the goods that move across our borders. So it's a fairly challenging environment. We know we've got about 12 government departments, about 6 state entities that are involved in border management in different kinds of ways, so it's quite a complex picture institutionally, and then that slide there just summarizes some of the points that have come through. Maybe the next slide. Let's just quickly talk about ports of entry. So already, members, if we look at 2011, 2012, 2013, the overall point we can make is that, and I think it has come through ports of entry, there's a steady increase in the volume of people moving into and out of South Africa. That point we know. But the other point that's also very interesting, and again we have seen this in the ports of entry, if you look at, this thing working, yeah, I don't think members can see that. Just compare arrivals to departures. In all instances, this is a national picture. In all instances, you can see that arrivals always that are greater than those coming into the country. In other words, the number of people coming in is greater than those that are leaving South Africa. Now we can have a nice discussion on what that means and the reasons for that, but these are the hard facts. Okay, next slide. So we also know that these are the busiest 10 ports of entry in South Africa. This was for 2013, but this picture in terms of the top 10, I think it remains valid presently. So we know our Tambo is the busiest. We've had a presentation from Bay Bridge, the Bombo as well, the Sierra Bridge, and these are the other busiest ports from a human movement point of view. So we have these, and this is publicly available. Next slide, please. We also note, from a customs point of view, that the ports of entry play a very important part in contributing to the revenue of South Africa. And all our ports of entry add about 16% to the government's revenue. So the way in which we manage our ports are very important. It's got a direct impact on the fiscus. So that point is very important. Next slide, please. Then we also know which are the 10 top ports of entry that collect most of the money when it comes to customs and related taxes. Durban Port collects the biggest amount of revenue. And the reason for that is simple. It's got the largest container depot in the country. So the amount of cargoes, containers that move in and out there, the majority requires that. The second is OR Tambo. And there are there's an interesting reason why it's OR Tambo. Maybe we can come back to that in the discussion. And then these are the others. We can go to the next slide. In terms of goods that are being exported, leaving the country, OR Tambo, if you look at the value of the goods, OR Tambo is the one port of entry where the goods with the highest amount of value go through OR Tambo. And the reason for that is because all our precious metals like diamonds and so on, it doesn't go to a Durban port or a Cape Town port or a Bay Bridge, it goes to OR Tambo. That is why the value of goods leaving the country is the highest at that port of entry of Tambo. Now, if we look at land ports of entry, and the three presentations we had here focus on land ports of entry, we know we have a range of challenges. And I think from a national perspective, we'll simply repeat what the colleagues have said. We know the infrastructure is poor. We know there's an issue of animals moving across. We also know that in some of the far-flung areas, there are settlements sitting very close to the kind of borderline. And we also know issues of natural disasters, flooding, also affects our borders. Those are just some of the problems, but there are many other challenges. Next slide, please. When it comes to our ports, our maritime ports of entry, again, there are a range of different challenges. Let me just speak to one or two of the pictures, because sometimes it makes it easier. This picture here is Cape Town, where we are. This was taken, I would say, this was in 2013. We had a situation where there were three shipping vessels, boats, that were basically quarantined in the port. There were about 75 Indonesian men on those three boats. It was discovered that those three boats, these 75 Indonesian men, they were on sea for about 3 years, and they must have paid a single thing. Basically, they were slaves. All the papers were confiscated. They were being held by the so-called captains of those vessels, and eventually Home Affairs had to take all those men into custody. And I think about 2 months later, we put them on planes and we basically sent them back to the country. But in the middle of all of this, one of those boats basically just left the harbor completely undetected. When people woke up the next morning, the one boat just left completely unprocessed. Was not managed. So that's an example of how we need to manage the kind of fishing industry. The other example I want to make around challenges around our ports. Just look at these three pictures. These are all ports. the physical geographical layout of our ports differ fundamentally. And that in itself contributes to the challenges that we have. Durban Port, Durban Harbour, has got the highest number of police officers there, about 1,500, just trying to manage that entire port. And the reason for that is because the layout is complex. There are many points where you can come in, go out. It's not very easy to secure. So all of that contributes to the security of vessels coming in and out, who can get onto to ships and who can get off. Okay? So those are, and these gentlemen here again are stowaways. So we have a range of different challenges with regards to our maritime port prevention. Now we come to our airports, international airports. Again, I think most of the challenges we kind of know about them. One of the biggest is the thing of organized crime and documentation and you know, bribing of officials, etc. We also know that our infrastructure also, despite the fact that airports are very controlled environments, the airports also present a lot of challenges in terms of how we secure the environment. One of the challenges we have is that they have a lot of private security companies there, and that in itself, many of us have been saying we need to find a certain way of dealing with that challenge. Okay? Now, Chairperson and members, let us talk about what we refer to as the land border environment. I'm not going to talk about ports of entry, I'm talking about the border line between ports of entry. This is now the fences, the rivers, where there's absolutely nothing. So, if you look at this map, we know how much kilometer of borderline we share with each of our neighboring countries. So the longest borderline that we share with the neighboring country is with Botswana. But lucky for us, crossing, keeping our fingers crossed, our biggest problems don't sit with that borderline. The shortest borderline that we share with the neighboring country is with Zimbabwe. And that's about 214 kilometers. With Mozambique, it's about 493. Look at Lesotho, 924 kilometers of borderline that we need to secure. So the point is, all of this speaks to the nature of the responsibility that we have as a state to secure this borderline, the land borderline environment. Next slide, please. So this was the result of a study that was undertaken by CSIR in about, I think, 2011, 2012. And they specifically looked at the borderline environment between South Africa and Lesotho. And in looking at the borderline, these were the different kinds of problems and challenges that they picked up after interviewing people, speaking to farmers, speaking to the local community, getting statistics from police. And you can see the range of different problems in the land borderline, from vehicle theft, stock theft, wood theft, illegal crossings of people, robbery theft, right, human trafficking, possession of dangerous weapons, farm attacks. Those were the kind of problems. By the way, Chairperson, you were asking for pictures. That picture there is a picture of what we refer to as Gate 6. Gate 6 is one of those informal crossings that is managed. If you look carefully there, that is what we call an agricultural V-gate, where animals are supposed to move. But, we're not showing exactly what's happening around there. But next to that gate, there are SANDF soldiers permanently stationed 24 hours. They sit there with a book. They don't stop people from moving. The only thing they do is they ask people to give their name and ask them where you're going. So that is how that is managed. On the Mozambican side, there are one or two shacks there, and the allegations are that those shacks are used as staging posts for people to collect things and transport things across the border. Okay? So that's an example of what happens at an informal crossing. Next slide, please. Now, in the land border environment, when it comes to infrastructure, there are big challenges around patrol roads and fences. So this slide comes from some of the work that Public Works and the SANDF is doing. So they are saying to us that the patrol roads and fences that we share with Zimbabwe and Mozambique largely have been damaged by some of the last floods that we've had and have not managed to repair all of those, both the roads and the fences. Then, if we take the example of Namibia and Botswana, we know that there are some foot and mouth fences. We are told that DAP is trying to carry some of the responsibility there. And when it comes to Swaziland and parts of the border with Lesotho, again, the state of the foot and mouth fences are in different states of repair. Now, Chairperson, what I'm not showing you here is that we actually have a map of South Africa where we are trying to map where the fences are in place, where we don't have fences, public works have got plans, where they're prioritized in certain parts of the borderline. So that is where the information gets serious and gets a bit sensitive. But the point is, between public works and DAP, and to some extent with the SANDF, we are trying to deal with the issue of patrol roads and fences, but this requires a lot of resources. And we don't have all the resources to deal with all of these challenges. Next slide. Now, still speaking about the land border environment, right now, Chairperson, South Africa, we've got the SANDF has got the largest footprint and presence in our land border environment. What does that mean? It means we've got 13, I think what the military calls companies or subunits, like troops, 13 troops. And these are the names of all the different troops. Fjordstrift, Maiking, Pondrift, Santrofi, Macadamia. There are 13 of them. Now, clearly it is very obvious that these 13 troops cannot secure this entire borderline. That is obvious. So the Department of Defense and SANDF said that they would like to scale up to at least 22 companies, at least, for them to make an impact. The Minister of Defense has said that in a previous budget. She continues to complain about that. I think Treasury is, you know, maybe trying to assist with that. But there's a second point I want to make about the supply chain system. The SANDF has done a strategic analysis around where we are vulnerable as a country. And they are saying that all these areas shaded in yellow, 1, 2, 3, 4, and to some extent those two, these areas are what they refer to as areas of strategic vulnerabilities, where there are strategic gaps in our defense. So those areas, by and large, also correspond with these areas where there's just movement of people, like that picture that we saw. But the point is, we don't have the resources. So, Chairperson, this map is a very important map, and clearly as a state we need to find innovative ways of beginning to deal with those areas of vulnerability. I thought I must just quickly put the map of the Kruger National Park there. And you know we share that with Mozambique on that side. In June we launched something called Operation Pyramid, and I'll explain that in other presentations very quickly. But the only point I wanted to make here is that the Kruger National Park is of strategic importance when it comes to securing our borderline with Mozambique. Because the rhino poaching that's happening there is directly linked to the challenges of cross-border criminal activity and the need to kind of stand on that. Next slide, please. So I thought I'll show a slide showing what has happened simply in 100 days last year, between July and September. This slide shows just in the space of 100 days how many poachers were apprehended, how many weapons were seized, and you can see how it affects virtually the entire Kruger National Park. So we are facing a serious onslaught on the integrity of this country and the sovereignty of this country. The Department of Environmental Affairs has done an analysis together with South African police, and there are interesting trends emerging with regard to where the criminals are coming from. We are told that in the past, the criminals mainly used to come from Mozambique and used to plan their operations from Mozambique into the Kruger. We are now told that they're becoming more sophisticated. They are now setting operations in South Africa, in our townships. And then they plan their operations from South Africa, they go into the Kruger National Park, they do whatever they need to do when they come back out. So it's getting very complex. But all of this is linked to how we secure our borderline with our neighboring country, Mozambique. Next slide. So we spoke about foot and mouth disease. So this information we got from that Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And again, this just shows at a very high level, it shows, you know, where they identify the strategic areas of priority. So for example, we can see when it comes to foot and mouth disease, it's a borderline that we share with Mozambique and to some extent with Swaziland. When it comes to Botswana and Namibia and Lesotho, the problems of foot and mouth disease are not that big. Remember, all of this is about security in our country, protecting it from any type of harm, including diseases. So that is why a map like this becomes important. Next slide, please. So again, this slide gives an example. This is simply an example of what you are asking, Chairperson, of some of the cross-border communities that exist. Swaziland, Botswana, Lesotho, we even give an example of Mozambique there. And it is in these cross-border communities that we find these so-called informal communities. And again, it's a really complex environment. I would urge the Commission to read, you find it in the newspaper, there is a pilot project that the Minister of Homeland Security and Transportation in Botswana have basically agreed to initiate. It's going to be the very first official community border crossing project. So it's not going to be a big portal entry like what you've seen. It's literally this environment where there is a fence, there is a river, and we know people are moving there, and we're going to have a pilot project simply to regulate and manage the movement of local community members from one country into the next and vice versa. So this Chidila Mulomo area is about an hour and a half drive from Mafeking up towards Botswana. So that's a very interesting project. And depending on the lessons that come there, we will go back to the gate 6, we'll go to the other informal crossings and we'll see what we need to do there. Next slide. Chairperson, you obviously know that we've got 7 cross-border rail crossings, and clearly this is an area that requires much attention. We didn't speak a lot about this. I'm sure the colleagues can give examples of how the goods trains are also being used for other strange things, and we need to do much more to improve the security around these border rail crossings. So all of that was about the land borderline environment. Let us just talk a little bit about the air borderline environment, the air border environment. So South Africa has about 1.2 million square kilometers of airspace directly above the country, and that is what we are directly responsible for. That's part of our sovereign territory. But again, in terms of international conventions and all of those things, South Africa actually has a much greater responsibility of securing an airspace right down to the South Pole. Our level of responsibility is not as intensive as that above our country, but the African Air Force has got some responsibility in playing some surveillance with regard to that extended airspace. Next slide, please. So, Chairperson, what we've also done, and we've got much more information than this, what we've done, we have tried to ask the following question: how many airfields do we have? Where are these things located? How much capability does the South African police have? How much capability maybe does the Department of Environmental Affairs, Department of Ag, what do these departments have to try and assist us in securing the air borderline environment? So we know a couple of things. We know that there are at least 1,200 small airfields around the country, at least. But what is more of interest is that there are about 181 small airfields within a 10-kilometer radius from the borderline. In other words, if you take a 10-kilometer zone, you'll find at least 181 small airfields. I don't know if members read in, it was either in the city press or in the Sunday Independent this weekend, where an example was given of that small aircraft was detained in Zambia. 12 or 6 South Africans on board, all happened to be white South Africans, and they were caught in an aircraft trying to get antelope from Zambia into a small aircraft, and they were trying to fly them into South Africa. And apparently it was found in that short investigation that they've been doing this for the last 2 years already. So the issue of small aircraft and small airfields, it's an issue. It's an issue. We're going to need to look at it fairly, fairly carefully. Next slide, please. This is a complex slide. I can't explain it properly, but there's at least one message that comes from the slide, and you obviously have more information of the SANDF and so on. But this slide, Chairperson and members, it shows the capability we have as a state to engage in permanent surveillance of our airspace. In other words, we've got radars, we've got all sorts of technology that allows us on a permanent 24-hour-a-day basis to monitor the airspace in the northern part of our country, basically over the Hao 10 area, because it's not really working, around the Durban area, East London area, PE, Western Cape, and a bit up to the West Coast. Okay? The point you're making, this is where we've got permanent surveillance capability. We have got other capability for the rest of the country, but if we share other information, and even if you look at this slide, the point that comes out is that large parts of our airspace is vulnerable. And people in the aviation sector know this. If they want to fly in strange ways, they can easily bypass the radars and do whatever they need to do. But again, it comes back to an issue of resources and what you can manage. So at least two of the GHCs that manage our airspace is South African Defense Force, and there's a parastatal called ATNS. I think it's called Air Traffic Navigation Service. The parastatal. I think you can even get them, if you're interested, get them to come and make a presentation. They will bamboozle you with statistics and technology and explain all these things much better. Okay, next slide. So now we're coming to the maritime environment. We've spoken about land, we've spoken about air, and now we're dealing with the maritime. Now again, let's try and explain this as simply as possible. South Africa is responsible for three parts of the sea that sit close to us. And there are technical terms for this. The first part, I'm going to ignore what's called internal waters. Internal waters are all things like rivers and dams and lakes, everything inside the country. So we'll just forget about that. So the first part of the maritime environment that's responsible is called the territorial waters. And it's the first 12 nautical miles. I think 12 nautical miles is almost about 18 or 20 kilometers if you do the conversion. Chairperson, you must not ask me why I call nautical miles, but that's what they use out there in the sea. So the first 12 nautical miles is the territorial waters. In that zone, all the laws of South Africa, all the laws that are passed by the NCOP and the NA apply in that zone, in that territorial waters. So that's sovereign territory. When you get to this zone, called the contiguous zone, so that is the next 12 nautical miles, and it takes on the coastline, it's 24. That zone, not all the laws of South Africa apply. It's only certain laws of South Africa apply that pertain to managing the kind of marine resources, I think, like fishing and so on. And then the last zone, it is called the EEZ, we should have seen that in school. EEZ means, it's not EEF, not EFF, but it's EEZ. It's the exclusive economic zone. The exclusive economic zone. In this zone, again, South Africa simply has got the responsibility to protect the country from any criminal activity happening here, just like with other zones. But also South Africa has got some rights to, for example, drill for oil and also to protect the marine resources. But the point I'm making is as you go through the 1, 2, 3 zones, the laws of South Africa diminish. So not all the laws of South Africa apply in that. Now why I'm explaining all of this here, so when I come to the BMA later, you will see why this long explanation becomes important. Okay, next slide. So again, I'm just giving an example of the capability that we have, what we are doing to secure this entire environment that I'm talking about. So if we look at the Department of Agriculture, Products and Fisheries, they've got a branch, a fisheries branch. They're based here in Cape Town, the foreshore. Their primary responsibility is to regulate the fishing industry and to look after our coastline from a fishing resources point of view. So Chairperson, they've got a system called VMS, Vessel Monitoring System. And this allows them to detect any movement of ships and boats along our coastline. But that system also does not allow us to look at everything in detail. One of the challenges that they've got there is that this system, it is based on, and now it becomes technical, so I'm trying to explain this simply, it is based on something called a transponder. So how this works, colleagues and chairperson and members, is that we sit here in Cape Town and we've got our technology sitting around the coast here, but this system can only pick up a ship or vessel, if this thing called a transponder is switched on. So a ship must have something switched on so you can see it. At any time they can switch it off. And if that thing is switched off, it just goes black on the radar, you can't see it. So that becomes a big challenge. So the entire VMS system, it is based on almost a level of trust where you expect the vessel to have this thing called a transponder is switched on. So there are a number of challenges with regard to how effective we can be around the VMS system, but it is assisting us with this issue of surveillance. Next slide. So again, we've got more information on this. I thought I should give an example. South African police, they've got about 33 vessels of different kinds that again is meant to protect this entire coastline from a pure criminal point of view. Chairperson, it's obvious, 33 vessels cannot patrol 3,900 kilometers of coastline. It's impossible. And even look at this point here. Of the 33, only 2 have the capability to go up to the 24 nautical miles. Remember I was explaining those zones? So this one is the second zone. So only 2 of the ships can go up to that second zone. The EEZ, that's one go there. It is only the Navy that can go there in terms of the capability. Next slide. So Chairperson, here I'm just sharing some statistics. Let's just go to the next slide. So a lot of this information here, it comes from research, from NGOs, it comes from academics, and so on. So this is not necessarily government information. So the one thing that we've picked up is that some literature out there is saying that in the mid-1990s there were about anything between 2 million and 12 million illegal foreigners in South Africa. Now that range is so big, I'm not sure if it means anything. But that is what so-called clever people, researchers, academics are saying, and NGOs. So that's the one thing they're saying. Secondly, those same NGOs and researchers are saying that there are plus minus 100,000 people that are trafficked in South Africa every year. But that 100,000 includes people that are trafficked within South Africa. In other words, they get taken as child labor from one part of South Africa to another. But it also includes cross-border. You can look at issues of how many people have been repatriated and reported. I think this comes from Home Affairs database. So for example, in 2006, plus minus 266,000 people had been deported or repatriated from South Africa. Also 2007, we can see the number of asylum seekers and the number of people that have been given refugee status. And we can see where all of these asylum seeker applications come from. Very interestingly enough, in 2007, the majority of applications came from Zimbabwe, followed by the DRC. Okay, next slide. Now, coming back to the borderline environment, the SANDF, as we said, with their 13 companies, they are responsible for securing the borderline. So they prepare statistics every year on the problems and challenges that they encounter. So if we look at illegal foreigners that have been apprehended by the SANDF in the borderline, you can see how it has ranged from 20,000 people in 2010-11, it dropped to about 16,000, and in the last financial year, about 18,000. So what this says is that every year, the SANDF, they arrest, capture, apprehend anything between 16,000 and over 21,000 people without papers that are trying to either leave or enter South Africa without papers on the borderline. This is not a port of entry, this is the borderline. And then we can see similar statistics for the number of weapons that they've recovered, number of stuff that they've recovered, vehicles, stolen vehicles. In the last year it was 116 vehicles. Criminals are where they can see that people have got a record when they check the stats. Just under 500. Contraband to the value of 52 million rand. Again, Jefferson, this is just a borderline. This is not ports of entry we're talking about. This is in the middle of the bush. This is in fences. This is, you know, people just walking through the middle of nowhere where the SANDF is active. So, Jefferson, this then concludes, you know, just the kind of state of the border that we're trying to share. So internationally, because we're also trying to read up on how other countries are doing things. Internationally, it looks like when countries look at the state of their border, they try and group it in those big headings. They look at challenges around human movement. They look at challenges around organized crime. And you heard our colleagues talk about syndicates. That's exactly what it is. Normal criminal activities, issues of terrorism. Hopefully that does not hit us and will not hit us seriously. Issues of invasive species, natural resources, the issue of rhino poaching is very big here. And of course, our issue of securing our country against any animal, plant, and human diseases. So that, if you like, the kind of high-level summary of the different challenges. So Chairperson, the next presentation, I hope we still have the energy. The next presentation, we will now begin to say how we are positioning the BMA, the Border Management Agency, to begin to address all of these challenges. So I can either pause or continue. Thanks, Chair. Okay, let's go to the next slide. So this was the initial presentation that we sent, and I'm going to be trying to be a bit quick. We'll try and deal with the background mandate, and I've dealt quite a lot with that. But very importantly, we'll try and explain some of the work that we have done already, and that includes the priorities. Okay. So Jefferson, this slide is an important slide. This, and we have heard this from all three the presentations. The first point here is that if you go to any border post in South Africa, you're going to find more than one government department or state agency doing this work. And we know that there are at least five key operational departments that are working with. Now, we are saying here that in itself is the first problem statement. That is the first problem that we have. The fact that we've got many organs of state, because it means we don't have a single system of command and control of our ports of entry. So in response to that, in the last 20 years, what has government done? Government has put in place a lot of different coordinating committees to try and coordinate all of these different role players. So we have succeeded a little bit, but we also not succeeded. Okay? So the big conclusion that government has reached and cabinet has reached is that the coordination mechanisms referred to here, they have proved incapable of addressing some of the structural management problems. So in other words, we need to change all of these current institutional arrangements where there are different role players doing different things. And that is why a single entity like the BMA is being proposed. Chairperson, I don't need to emphasize this point. The SSA, on an annual basis, they do national intelligence estimates, and in every single of those reports, they talk about the challenges, the threats, and the weaknesses in our border environment. For that, they talk about every single year. Next slide. So where do we get the political mandate to start talking about something called the DNA? This slide explains where we get the political mandate. In 2009, in the State of the Nation address, President Zuma indicated that as a country we're going to start the process of setting up a DLA. So that was in 2009. In 2013, Cabinet took a decision that we're going to establish a DMA that will include, and this is very important, that will include the ceding of functions from relevant organs of state. So in other words, there's going to be a formal shift of functions from Home Affairs, from DAP, from police, from SAR. You're going to take the relevant functions and you're going to move it, migrate into the thing called a DMA. So that decision was taken in 2013. Last year, almost a year ago, in December, Cabinet endorsed a vision for the DMA. So now they went beyond the general decision. They took a concrete decision around what the vision for the DMA should look like. What I forgot to say, Chairperson, in 2013, Cabinet took the decision that Home Affairs must be the lead department. So that's why Home Affairs is playing this role. But just because it's playing a lead leadership role doesn't mean that other departments are not affected. So we work very closely as project office with a lot of other departments. And then, Chairperson, on the 23rd of September, less than a month ago, 3 weeks ago, Cabinet approved a draft DMA bill that should come to Parliament. And that bill has already formally been submitted. Next slide. Okay, so I've dealt with these slides. I'm not going to speak about this. You can move. Next is for you, please. So, Chairperson, what is border management? If we look at South Africa, if we look at other countries, this slide tries to explain as simply as possible the different elements that make up this concept of border management. We know it's about immigration control, we know it's about customs control, we know it's about border safeguarding, we know it's about looking at the inspection of plant products, about border policing, animal fish and animal products, and also human health, but very importantly, it's also about the infrastructure. So border management is about all of these things. But obviously for South Africa, we need to be much more specific in terms of what must go to the DMA. But when we talk about border management, it is generally all of these things that you see on the slide. Next slide. We've spoken about these challenges, we can move. We've spoken about this, we can move. Right. Now, Chairperson, what we've done is we have done something called a business case for the DMA. And in this business case, we have done a study of how many state officials are involved in this thing called border management in South Africa at our ports of entry. And we came to a figure of plus minus 9,000. So right now, as you're sitting here talking to Chairperson, we are about 9,000. I think the figure has come down slightly because we continue to do work on this. Right now, I think the latest accurate figure is about 8,891 state officials from these different departments. The majority of those state officials come from SAP, followed by Home Affairs, SAR, Health, and DAP. So these departments, these are the ones you find at your ports of entry. Okay? So when we establish the DMA, we are assuming that all of these officials at least will be going to the DMA. We're not even beginning to talk about those that sit in the air conditioned in Victoria, air conditioned offices. We're not before coming to them. Here we're talking about officials that are working hard on the ground there. Okay? And then I've already mentioned, Chairperson, if you look at this bullet, that the SANDF has got 13 companies or units spread across the country, and it adds up to about just over 2,200 soldiers that are securing our land borderline. Next slide. So the next question we are asking is how much money do we spend as a country at our ports of entry on border management? And the figure that we have is about 3.8 billion rand that we spend managing our different ports of entry. And again, you can see how this money is split between those key departments. Most of the money is from SAP, and the reason for that is because, again, they have the highest number of police that are involved in border policing. Next slide. So, Chairperson, now we have to ask ourselves the question, so we need to establish something now to respond to the challenges. We've taken the decision, Cabinet has said, we need to establish something called a DMA. What are some of the key assumptions that, and principles that guided us when it comes to establishing this DNA. And I'm not going to go through all of them. So one key assumption is that the DNA must be responsible for a basket of different functions. So in other words, it must be immigration control. It must be customs. It must be port health. It must be border policing. So that's an example of the basket of functions. The second key assumption, chairperson, is that the DNA is not going to affect the role of the SANDF. We are not going to get involved with the SANDF. The SANDF must continue to have its constitutional responsibility of protecting the country against military aggression. So this thing about border protection, we are going to leave that to the SANDF. But what we are saying to the SANDF, chairperson, and it has taken them a long time to agree with us, is that you're saying to the SANDF, we want you to stop doing things called border control. So in other words, when your animal's jumping, when there's somebody trying to jump the borderline, that is not a military function. That is where a border guard, that's where the DNA must be involved. So we are trying to separate this thing called border protection from something called border control that the DNA in future will be responsible. Okay? So those are some of the assumptions on the side. A second important point about the DNA is that the DNA is not going to take over issues of policy from the different departments. So in other words, if there's issues of which countries must we require to have a visa to come to South Africa, that's got nothing to do with the DNA in terms of a policy decision. Home Affairs will continue to make those decisions. The DNA must simply be an implementation agency. So when it comes to issues of health, the Department of Health will make policy decisions. When it comes to trade and industry, the Department of GTI, they will continue to make the policy decisions. So the DNA is going to be an implementation agency. So, chairperson, there are a couple of other things we can say. The DNA will need to balance issues of national security and legitimate travel and trade. So the DNA is going to be a very interesting institution where we need to balance these different priorities. Next slide. Chairperson, in our work that we've done, we have to ask ourselves the question, what form, institutional form, must the DNA take? Must the DNA be a government department? Must the DNA be something called a government component? Must it be something called a specialized service delivery unit, a public entity, or government business enterprise like SAA and ACSA? So after doing a lot of research and consulting with people and looking at the pros and cons, we ended up with two options. The DNA can either be a government component or it can be a public entity. But after comparing again these two, we ended off with the preference that the DNA must be a public entity, a national public entity. So that's currently the kind of preference. And again, chairperson, we can share the kind of reasons why we think it should be a national public entity. Next slide, please. So this is the vision that Cabinet endorsed. We think this is very important because this has guided our work. The first is that the DNA must be outcomes focused. You know, the DNA must balance the facilitation of trade, travel, and security. So in other words, the DNA is not just going to be about national security. It's not only going to be about issues of trade. It's not only going to be about facilitating people. It must balance all of those things. So that's the first point of the vision. Secondly, the DNA must be established as a single body. So this thing of where you have five different departments doing different things must come to an end. When you come to port of entry, you need to have a single body there. And this DNA will be responsible to a single minister, executive authority. And right now, based on the cabinet decision, that executive authority is the Minister of Home Affairs. Then also we have said the DNA must be responsible for all ports of entry. We've got 72. It must be responsible for all ports of entry and the entire borderline. Next slide, please. We also say in chairperson that the DNA must establish something called a National Border Risk Management and Targeting Center. Chairperson, we have looked at international best practice. We've even visited countries. Last year, this time, we were visiting countries as officials to try and see what we can learn. One of the things we learned is that the countries that are doing very good at border management, they've got something called a National Targeting Center. This is where all the information, all the national risk management comes to a single place. And everyone sits there, the police sits there, immigration sits there, customs sits there, the intelligence people sit there, everybody sits in one center and they try and analyze all the risks facing the country. So therefore we have put ourselves this is priority that Cabinet has endorsed of establishing this national solvency center. Another part of the vision, Chairperson, is that the BMA must continue with some of the current service delivery improvement initiatives. You already heard colleagues speaking about the one-stop border post. Chairperson, not even 5 kilometers from here, there's something called the PECC, the Port of Entry Control Center here at Cape Town. I would urge the committee to go and look there. That is a pilot project for the BMA. It is the first pilot project for the BMA. It is one building where everyone, all different departments, were sitting in one building for the first time in this country. We've not done this before. So we're quite excited about that. Obviously there are challenges, but we think there's more to learn. Next slide. Chairperson, you've heard us talk, all of us have been complaining about infrastructure. You've heard the colleagues here from the Gombo and the Cerro and we are saying that the BMA must be responsible for its own infrastructure. So in other words, we are saying to our colleagues from DPW, thank you but no thank you. The BMA now will be responsible to build its own portal entry, to maintain it. We are not going to rely on public works. Public works, you've got enough challenges of your own. So we have put that in the book. Chairperson, the last point of the vision is that the BMA must have its own organizational culture, identity, and conditions of service. So again, when you go to our Stambo, you go to Facebook, you're only going to see one uniform. This is just an example. You're not going to see a set, the customs, the port, out the deck. You're going to see one uniform, a BMA uniform. So that is what we mean by that word. Next slide. Now, let's move. So Chairperson, I'm going to conclude now, and I'm not going to go through all of the details. I simply want to make this point. Go to the next slide. I'm going to try and end off on the slide, Chair. So, Cabinet took a decision to say that while we establish the BMA, and Cabinet wants the BMA to be established a year from now, December next year, and it cannot be established in December 2016 for the very latest, it must be the 1st of April 2017, the start of the financial year 2017. But Cabinet said, while you are trying to establish the BMA, you must do some other things to show us you are serious. So these are all the things we are doing in the meantime, leading up to the establishment of the BMA. Quickly, Chairperson, we are busy concluding something called a multi-party agreement. There are 22 departments that will become part of this multi-party agreement. The purpose of that multi-party agreement, it is about how we can get different departments to strengthen their cooperation in this interim period, in this transition period. So we think that this is the precursor to the legislation. Secondly, Chairperson, you heard us talk about this thing called the VCOCC. This is the structure that is currently trying to coordinate all of us. That structure reports to the office that I manage. We have undertaken a review of that structure and there are certain things we want to do differently to improve the way in which we coordinate. Thirdly, Chairperson, we have done a business case for the BMA. We have already submitted this to National Treasury and National Treasury will consider this business case and then National Treasury will need to classify the BMA in terms of the PFMA, the Public Finance Management Act, as a national public entity. So right now, as we're sitting here, National Treasury is already looking at the business case. Chairperson, I've spoken about Operation Pyramid, I've referred to it. The purpose of Operation Pyramid, again, is to improve the management of our board, of the board environment, but we're focusing here not on ports of entry, but on the borderline environment. That's why we launched it at Kukuza in the Kruger National Park, because that is the borderline environment. Chairperson, we've also identified 4 BMA pilot sites. I've already said the first pilot site was this one here in Cape Town, the Port of Entry Control Center. We've also identified Kinshasa, Kroonstad, and the Kruger National Park. Here personally, we've undertaken a detailed expenditure performance review. In other words, we've looked at all the money that we're spending as government. So we've done some detailed work there. We have done work on the bill. I've explained, Chairperson, that the bill has now been submitted to Parliament. Chairperson, we've also done something called a social economic impact assessment for the bill. The presidency tells us that this is the first social economic impact assessment that has been done by the department as required. So we have done the first social economic impact assessment in a detailed manner. Then number nine, Chairperson, we are working on something called an integrated border management strategy. So this work will continue into next year. This is number nine. And then the last thing that we are working on, we are trying to see how we can align the different border risk management processes between the different departments and how that can contribute to the national targeting center. Chairperson, I'm more than just want to stop here. There are a couple of other slides. Maybe just flip through it, but I really want to stop now. So that's the multi-party agreement. It just explains some of the content. Next slide, please. Business case, we just explained that we give it to Treasury. This explains Operation Pyramid. These are some of the different things we want to do around Operation Pyramid. There are different focus areas. You can go to the next slide. Again, these are the four pilot sites that I spoke about. That's the process. Next slide. Again, we can continue. I indicated, Chairperson, we did a review of the DCOCC. The next slide. And then I explained that we also have submitted the bill to Parliament. And then, Chairperson, these are some of the key principles. But I think we will come back to this committee when we get into issues around the bill. So I won't go too much into detail. And then maybe just pause here. We've got public comments. We've got at least comments from 34 organizations and people and persons. Maybe about at least 289 specific comments. And look at all of them. Yeah, can continue. I think we can just go right to the end now. So we'll be doing an overview of all of the bill here, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you very much. I now have spoken enough. Thank you.
Okay, John, thank you very much. Now for members to engage, bearing in mind that you have to ask him some meetings. Can you engage with the presentation, starting with Honorable Kawula, Stock, Honorable Matthew, Honorable Mpuru? Yeah, can I leave it that way?
Thank you very much, Honorable. I thank you thanks to all these colleagues for the presentation and very enlightening and having with your faith. I have just one thing or two things to accept. One to that presentation on the PMA issues. From what has been presented, I want to understand how the establishment of the PMA is going to change things. If the other things have not changed, the challenges that have been presented pertain to mostly non-existence of defense, pertains to unofficial entry points and issues like those. Now, you are having four pilot sites in Shara because you need the border line, and I've not had any challenges pertaining to that. And the other three of them, to me, it doesn't prove anything to say they are inefficient and therefore the establishment is going to be better because of ATSC, because operations are smooth anyway. So your pilot sites to me don't have any challenges, and therefore they don't convince to say when you do something else, then it will be better because these are the challenges. The challenges that they pertain to these issues is how are we attending to that? How is the ATSC going to assist the handle with regards to the issues that they still tend to set up? Because from what has been presented, it doesn't tell me how is the PMA going to be attending to these challenges that they are facing. Challenge of infrastructure, challenges of human resource challenges of borderline, etc. And to my colleagues on the part of both, they have very, very interesting points in doing the SNTF. They will only take 30 of who has passed, and they don't act. They will only monitor. Why is that? Why is that happening? I think to understand why not stop the wrong thing that is happening in front of them? They will only monitor. Oh, your name is Kevin, that means go through. You're taking your name. Your name is Matei, go through your taking. Why not record it? Why only take names down and not record it? And why is Home Affairs not collaborating effectively with the SNTF for those roles to be corrected? Why just look at them? Why is there no effective collaboration among the South African government departments? I just want to understand the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I was partly covered by Honorable Kaunda on the issue of the some of the soldiers being at the borderline, not taking action, just merely taking the statistics. No, thank you very much, Honorable Kaunda, for covering on that one. The issue of the Border Management Agency, from where I'm sitting, it looks like it is not all the solution for us, of all the challenges that were presented, from the bomb hole to the big bridge. But now the problem is this Border Management Agency going to come up with new staff components and all of that? I'm actually asking myself that question, because if the Border Management Agency is going to take care of the people that are still in the system, then those problems that were there in the past, they are still going to find expression in one way or the other. And for example, you see in the pre-presentation, before the BFA presentation itself, you find the situation, one of the challenges, which is a cross-cutting issue, the issue of corruption. People taking bribes and allowing the illegal immigrants to get in or out of the country, somewhat with illegal substances and so forth. Now, if that is the case, where the DMA is going to come and take the same people and put them in the system, the only thing that is going to change from the layman's point of view is that's going to be the uniform, because the faces will still be the same. And given the fact that these people have been, some of them, they've been in the system for quite some time. They know how the system operates. The second issue, they also know, they are well converted about how to manipulate the system. In terms of my own view, I feel that to a certain extent, it is not necessarily going to solve the problem. Once I agree with the concept itself, it's a very good concept, because it takes us and takes care of, in terms of the common approach of dealing with the issues. But my concern is just that if you are going to take along the same people that are there, who are actually not dealing with the problem, who are just changing the outlook of the environment. So maybe you can just respond to us and tell us, or clarify us, to say, this is the approach that we're going to take the wrong time. Because I was thinking when we were presenting, because I was thinking this is a good thing that might happen, the DMA, because you have to build the fences, you have to come on the infrastructure and all of that. This is a good thing. If you look at the concept. But maybe as part of the approach or the solution going forward, I should not just walk the ground with too many questions. I should also be able to come up with some of the proposals and solutions. So in terms of my own view, I was of the view that maybe some of the people that we have, we might have the same people that are seated in the bomb hole. Maybe try to redeploy some of those people. Maybe throw them in the Maasai room, maybe for 6 months and all of that, so that our people are not comfortable or they are not used to the system to the extent that they are not comfortable to do their own things of manipulation and all of that. Because these people that go out and clean out the country, they depend on the seasonal activity. So the people that work at the border management or border lines and all of that, they even know the people that get out in December or January and all of that. So there's a relationship in the process that has been built for those people. So when you rotate or some of them. In throwing somebody there and all of that, it's not on a consistent approach. It differs from one season to the other. Then, to an extent, to assist to say, in the next 6 months, you don't know whether you'll be deployed or deployed to the Bombo or whether you'll be deployed to Maseru. Because these people are the components. Some of us will get experience of people, and these people, they've got a database, they've got the contact numbers, they've got the emails, and the possibility. And if I'm seated here and I want to go to the shop, for an example, then we just call stop that seat at that border, and inform her or him that you'll be coming on this day, this is the activity that we'll be doing, and so forth and so forth. So essentially a database of operations about how they normally operate. So the last issue which I also wanted to start on is the issue of the illegal immigrants that get out of our neighboring countries, where our brothers and sisters are getting out maybe for better opportunities, economic opportunities, maybe for employment and all of that. Because for an example, the province where I come from, there is no specific border, like for example the Northern Kingdom. But we are, that's not mean that we are not affected by what happens in the broader national perspective or challenge of the country. And the nearest, or our neighboring countries, they are affected by the Maseru borderline. Now, most of the people that jump out of their country to our country is the Lesotho people. And most of them, these people, our brothers and sisters from Lesotho, they come to us for employment opportunities. Now, when they get out of the border of our own country, you find somebody applies for a period of 2 months. And then the person gets an employment and all of that. And this is one of the issues that contributes to what we are doing with the issue of xenophobia. Because when they get to other countries, or maybe other cities, and they say to, well, normally you pay somebody 100 grand. And these people, or brothers and sisters, are normally set to come, 50 grand and so forth. And they don't want to go back to their place of origin. Now they sit in the country of, in our country, in South Africa, beyond the payments that were actually allocated or actually approved for them to pay. Now the only time when they get back to their country is during the first 16 days, when they go home. And when they come back, it's not over two. You come back, the numbers will increase from time to time. So I want to know, these people that they get out for the payment of the month, and then when they come back, the payment is expired. When you go back to the border, how do you get access to get in there? And then you again get access to get out of the country of origin, maybe. And then you get the beginning of the situation. So those are the two issues that I think I'm not prepared to get started on. But be let us play. I think the issue of border management is a good concept. To a certain extent, it will actually assist us in the long run. I was looking very appreciative to you. And I think it will take us time. Thank you very much for that. For those two efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. The problem is that our country is very poor. The borderline is very small. And the big problem is to be when you look to make for the problem. Because you don't know who is the deal. How many people you have that are in the country that come from other countries. Then you need to pay for them. And those that you don't make for them, need to pay for them. They are paying to their backdrop, their pay. They think not to let belong to an African country. They are part of the system. They have to do things like in and out and controlling them comes with some kind of things that I mentioned, then they will be able to do something in this meeting. Hence the importance of the presence of political and gender. The issue that I actually wanted to mention is it takes a lot of resources to develop the meeting. Yes, as they should be passed into or promulgated into a law. I think as you are planning towards the acceptance stage of this creation. Treasure is doing the same as a slave. Because it could be very problematic for the ex to have only five days to see what they did to make. Because the magnitude of the task for this DNA environment is going to require a lot of research. Now, the minister, the deputy director, just to give us a kind of assurance that as it happens, the resources that need to challenge for this DNA to be into the physical language is going to be implemented. The other issue that we need to look at is a micro-resistant issue of staff. I get the sense that maybe 90% or 80% of the staff is going to migrate to the end. And there's going to be rich for me. Because a lot of wrong has been happening. People are doing it. I've already been doing it. So I think there's going to be a change in process. There's a going to be capacitated process that are going to be retained by the DNA. Otherwise, it is a good concept from my own listening. I think it will be said that the test of us is something.
Thank you for the presentation. It was very informative. I thought that our country sovereignty was at threat because we don't own most of our land, but it seems that also that our borders are not well controlled, so I'm pretty concerned about that. But thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Take it in.
I'm concerned that you don't have many female or women officials in your department. So I'd like to just ask where are the women and you're not finding when I resign, I'm available to get a position. You talk about taxi rates being a problem close to obviously the land border approach. Why is that? And the reason I'm asking this is that most of our people are poor, and we use this as an office. They don't have cars, and they don't have access to private cars. So for me, it's a point of convenience, so I'm not understanding why the taxi rates are a problem in providing transport to our people to get to and from. And can we not work with the taxi associations or the taxi companies to be able to make flow for our people who can't afford to travel easier to travel? I was speaking about economic tourism or economic tourism. I know, and the reason I'm asking you this is that I know I've lived in very rural parts of South Africa and you just go across the road into Swaziland or into Mozambique. And most times it wasn't necessarily to the extent of being a burden to either South Africa or the country that you're going into, but it's for buying goods, going to visit the family. So, in the sense, do you have any statistics or something that speaks to that? Do people who actually go to Kosovo, especially between like the Swaziland and the Mozambique areas, are they necessarily your not foreigners, but your illegal migrants who are coming here to set up shop or weddings, just family going to visit, buying goods, taking them home, that sort of thing? And I don't think that's a huge issue. Human trafficking is huge, and we just deal too much with that. What do you do when you find or you detect that the children that are being human trafficked, which departments are involved? I'd like you to speak to that and how will the DMA be incorporated to deal with that issue? And do we have some steps, I might have missed it, but do we have any steps on the human trafficking, like more recent, like 2014, 2015? I mean, I've had stats, I mean, like people that have actually been caught, or children, and how people deal with that. There seems to have been a regular, like an increase of tourism or visitors into our country, like by a million every year, according to the stats. Now there's this new visa regulation that has some parties up in arms about saying that tourism has dropped. Has it been really, really dropped that we are not getting as many tourists as we should? And you talk about 22 companies that are needed. Is this privatizing? So I'll be privatizing our business for the soldiers. I'd just like you to explain that a bit clearly. Okay, thank you. Your business case model, are you looking at something that's more self-sustaining? I mean, clearly this whole border control brings a huge amount of income. What is the 12% contribution?
16%.
So I've been trying to look at a more self-sustaining model for you to the burden on the state. And we're looking for the design of vehicles to be to fund this action. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. My colleagues covered me more especially on the issue of electric fencing. I am from the Limpopo province. I tried to travel to Paid Bridge. I've been there at the beach and in the end. People are just moving in and out. I don't know as to whether we have the child security measure or not. Number two, national, what are we doing about the working conditions of the human personnel that we have there? Because they were complaining to say, like the presentation, the water quality, they don't have drinking water, they don't have coolers, they don't have fan, it's very hot, they don't have chairs. I don't know what you feel about this thing. But if we don't have strict measures as a main purpose engine, are we going to be able to control this informal enterprise? I've been to Bafur, I've been to Pembenari, I've been to Masanti. People just go in and out. What are we doing about this thing? Limpopo has given us a presentation, but there are no statistics as other presentations here that shows us was in 2010, in 2011, in 2012, this is what is happening. I think it would be proper also for the people to give us a number so that we are able to raise some of these issues with the government and ministry. We have been told in the land repatriation center during our summit. We were told the root cause of this illegal immigration. Some are here for job opportunities. Some are here because of political unrest in their countries of origin. So we think that the budget that we are allocating that for that center is less. Or is it too much? But according to me, I think it is less, it is costing the department a lot. Why can't we come up with a plan to say, next to all these entry points, we have infrastructure open. It will be easier for these people to be referred. Unlike moving around the whole country, taking them to the land association, and from that area, taking them back into their relevant countries of origin. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Welcome, thank you very much, honorable members. Just want to indicate to the department that you may not respond to all situations. Those that you can respond, but we want to have responses in writing when you can. But also, I do want to indicate that most of the issues that I carried, especially the door report on the presentation that we received, are more to other departments than to informers. They need attention of other departments, which leaves me in saying that maybe there might be a need of a follow-up meeting where we invite everyone to be part of the meeting so that we get answers on the issues. Some of the issues that were raised are small things for me where I'm sitting. They could be fixed. The question of coolers at places, I don't think, I'm not imagining how you survive there without coolers. It's falling apart. The environment of our employees should be sticking to the workload that they have. I think the other matter that I want to speak to is the issue of public work. I think it becomes similar because for me, the coolers and the building speak to public work. But now they are not here. Honourable members, there might be a new place to talk about this and but also, maybe in our next oversight, we take the board. We only focus on the board and see what is it that we can assist with. Maybe our meeting should be around one of the board in different departments. One area that I'm just flagging our employees. Not all of them, not only home affairs, maybe some other departments, are very managed. I'm from Pumalanga. And there is a place around Stoma. You stay here in shelter of nursing, the high profile area in nursing. Look at the money that they are earning and the property that they are doing. The place is much to be denied. I think it's an area that you can take interest in as leadership in those departments. Teachers, what do they get this money? Every day they complain about my salary that are not enough. But they are their money. Monthly money. It's fortunate that it has included planning. Something that we should not be proud of and see how we can do that. We know how much we own and we have looked at that. The building, where I'm coming from, the bomb operation, there was a door that opened with a big hole. Very old. I'm talking about ordinary door which I, as a person, individual, I can buy. Those are small things that I think need to be looked at as soon as possible. We know that we're waiting for this water management agency, but some of them could be fixed before that. The issue of informal border control is not as simple as we input it. It needs us to go back what happened with this border report. You will find that my uncle was only with a family building one area. Then they came with the borders and separated us into two. Now, if I want to go to my auntie or my uncle, do I have to travel 200 kilometers instead of 5 minutes that I was taking in the past? That is the reality of the world. It might be misused now by criminals, but the fact of the matter, most of these people go to their relatives. That is why you have so many Thomas speaking people in South Africa, especially Pumalanga, you have so many more tribal people and shamanistic people, because those are the bordering countries. People were divided into two. As we speak about them, let's bear that in mind. Yes, they are used for criminal elements. Yes, people need to be arrested or controlled. But people, they were divided, delivered. Nobody, those who pulled up those lines did not care for those people. Separated relatives into two. Sure. Still they have to pay, travel 200 kilometers to buy a bread. Because maybe the shop is on the other side of the border. It's either in South Africa or Mozambique, if I may use our example. School. What do we say? Talk about Africa. We are saying we need to invest in education. And you find that a school is in South Africa, there's no school in Swaziland. It's a very serious matter, because our people are complaining about services, not enough services that the government is giving. On the other hand, we plan for people we don't know in South Africa, because we don't plan for those people coming from outside. But looking at it as Africa, what do we do? That is why I'm saying to say, for me, it goes beyond arresting people who are coming in and out. There are a number of issues that we must address as we deal with this matter moving forward. So some of the issues, that is why you go to prison, there are more Swazi-speaking people than people, I don't know which one it says, coming from South Africa, because maybe those people were together before. Because they were divided into two. You go to the Bongo, same story. So I think as we want to control this border, we must bear that in mind. Aren't we making our people to suffer more? If we formalize them in smaller border posts, how do we manage them? Maybe that is where the issue of writing them down in an army is used, which for me does not help at all. Because what if I give you a wrong name? How do you know that I'm not accepting? Don't even ask documentation from me. Because we must also be checking whether those people are coming to us and if I think it's not happening now. So it must be very good. The issue of private essays, I'm not hearing it coming. Maybe it's because we did not finalize, conclude, go to it details into the presentation of the border management agency. Private essays. You see, we are worried about people who are walking and you see them. What about those people who don't know, who fly every day and those over? In your presentation, you said the largest airspace is illegal. We worry about people who are walking down those people. Those who are in flight, we know what they're bringing in the country and taking out of the country. How are we going to manage that? With this border management agency, is it going to be in a position to deal with that? Because I think that is where our biggest problem is. At least those who are walking down, they might be scared to carry dangerous things. Yes, they do reduce it, but not as big as those who are using the airspace. Because they are managing, for the mere fact that they are using flights, private flights for that matter, it means they have money. Home Affairs, there is a proposal. It has been coming up so many times that there is a need of a second border post next to the Bongo to Mozambique. It is informal now, it's working, it's operating, people are using it. But the proposal is, let's make it an official border post. There are so many people from Mozambique and South Africa, but there is only one border. I think it goes the same way as the event bridge. Can't we consider having another one? How does it happen? How do people put proposals for in a formal way? Because each time you talk to people from the Bongo, they will talk about that. If you go to community meetings, they talk about, can you open another border post every day? I think it's the same with Limpopo and Zimbabwe. The operating hours, those are resources that we would expect to have. The department to give a specific answer. Operating hours in the Bomba Buddha home. Why are we not having 24 hours? It's very easy, that's what I think. It's not only now, it has been like that. And people had to talk about the operating hours. And the scanners, I was surprised or shocked to hear that those trucks go in and out. There's no way that you can offload all what they're carrying there. It's just a formality that we are getting or taking what they are doing there. The scanners, who is supposed to buy them? In some sense of that, staff. And staff is not true. Those scanners, why do you have a border gate? Why do you have a border gate if you don't have a scanner for staff? Why do we stop them? Why do we stop them anyway, the staff? Because you'll always use eyes like mine, my naked eyes on the truck, but nobody will ride up there will put a dangerous thing on top of the truck. Definitely they will hide people. I don't know what the item is now, but we need those scanners as yesterday. If that can put other things aside, let it be so. The scanners, we want those scanners. We can't be sitting here complaining about smuggling drugs and what into the country or out of the country, but we're doing nothing at the border, at least in other places, but not in the border. You're saying they can't scan those who are riding passengers. Whether we have a border management agency or not, but we do need scanners. Those are things that we must deal with and the borderline. Now I understand why you're not showing them. Yeah, you arrived to see them. So there's a problem. I don't know whether those people are undermining our country or our officials like those supposed who are despising women. How can people pass just next to the border? Limpopo border post. I do have those pictures. I was just asking for other members to see, but myself, I don't have those pictures. I was saying to myself, there is no border here. Because most people who are walking are passing the other side. And there is a fence there. They are sitting there. As we were there, as the provincial delegation, people were waiting on the other side of Mozambique for us to go so that they can cross. It's a waste of money. We have personnel there, and the main complaint there against those who have the river that the holding area, they don't have a holding area. They take them, send them back, they come back again. Officials from defense were saying one person they will catch him more than 5 times a day. You send him back, you'll come back. So, I think today we need to do something else with that. There must be some, I think part of it, but also it means something to us as a country. Maybe we're too kind, too lenient, I don't know what. But as I was saying, Ella, most of the problems that we have that could be addressed are more related to other departments. But also I want to say to all members that this department is far much bigger than we always think. This itself, for me, the department, forget about ideas and other things. This is in itself is a department. Maybe this border management agency is going to ask this time. But I do agree with all of the members that are saying, I'm not saying let's not take the current official, but the manner in which things are happening with the current official and then to come up with major transformations in terms of looking at what is happening in the world. You are transferring these problems from different departments if you want everything. Something to be done. Over to you, I don't know how you're going to respond. Like I was saying, some of the answers, if you can't transform now, we should have in the
thank you very much, and if I can make a proposal, I know time, like, and then obviously we in your hand. But I would just propose, Chairperson, that we allow for relevant members to give quick responses, and I can come at the end. We also have colleagues from our legal services and from Home Affairs. So those questions are actually affecting Home Affairs. The two gentlemen sitting in front here, who can try and they can respond to those. But the other questions, I'm sure we can deal with them. So if you agree, Chair, we can give members the colleagues from our delegation, maybe. It's up entirely up to you. You can also not do that.
I never thought that there was a relationship between suit and tie and legal. Some members have got pleasure of some commitment. But very quick allow them to respond.
Thank you for having me, Chair. I think I just wanted to quickly answer the one that the SNDF should name. What I refer to there, that area between Manama and also, SNDF is not mainly there. They rely on the Southern Defense Force, not our Defense Force. But the one that is taking name is Southern Defense Force, not our Southern Defense Force.
Honorable Chair, I think the ones that were touching on Facebook was the matter of access control, theft, and health corruption. We do have a mammoth task in terms of the fight with the honorable member indicated and other pedestrians. However, during our interventions in the meeting, we identified the set challenges and make sure that specific department whose mandate is to deal with access control at the gate. Primarily, it's DHA and FAPS that are mainly tasked to ensure that there is access control at both points. In Viceroy, we have what we call the South Gate and the North Gate. And the first department there that's responsible would be the Inspectorate Division of Home Affairs, supported by SAPS. So during our engagement, we make sure that they are reminded of their mandate and inspections of the passport should be made. We've also carried the message over to our counterparts on the Zimbabwean side, highlighted the issue of the people that are not documented and seem to have crossed their side of the port. We said, how did these people cross your port of entry? Kindly assist us, as we are also making sure that our people don't cross into Zimbabwe undocumented. So we've highlighted that, and we've seen some improvement in that regard, although there is still a room for improvement, and several engagements are going on. On step, that talks to Baybridge, I think we've tried to highlight the statistics of the movement. I'm not sure if the honorable member was in the house when we presented on the step. I believe that we try to highlight the figures. Yeah. On corruption, Honorable Chair, we admit there are challenges. Fortunately, all the departments that are on the ground at the port of entry have got what we call anti-corruption and counter-corruption units, which are specifically looking at their departments because they are the sub the experts on the specific mandate. They are looking at that and unfortunately they are not able to be full time at the port of entry. But from time to time, covertly, they do come to the port and do disruptive activities on corruption. And during peak season, they also come and join us to make sure that our operations are success and corruption does not have a room in our operations. We are also supported by the SSA in terms of making sure that they are doing lifestyle audits. They've started with departments, they prioritize DHA and FATF, and then the others will come to be vetted. So corruption is being dealt with from different angles. So it's a matter that is being worked on. Thank you.
On the, I think as a country we need to say specifically with what the chair was talking to, that when the borders came, you would find that there was just a split. The line was drawn on the side and said you are on the other side. Now you are subject and your brother is now South African. And with that you're quite right. But within the legislative framework within South Africa, any other thing that has not been declared as a part of the Minister of Foreign Affairs becomes very difficult. Hence, we have the project that the Mr. Elroy Africa spoke about, for example, to learn the lessons. Because part of the problem that you would encounter is that it is no longer Moses and his brother crosses, but you find a national of another country who does not reside within that space, coming, who does not come from the neighboring country, coming and using that space because it's not regulated and you do not find people having this position to make. The second problem that you would find is the situation of port of entry. You would know that when you designate the port of entry, there are various departments that need to play a role within that situation. So you need a buy-in from all these various departments to see whether that can be. So I'm saying, yeah, they, from the ones with the ties, there are those issues that you get broken down or you get tied to the legislative framework that you have. With regards to the fact relating to whether do we currently or as we are sitting right now, do we have statistics relating to trafficking persons? You will recall that the trafficking in persons only was signed by the president in 2015. We are just saying between the various departments, Justice Department of Human Rights for the Social Development, we were then enjoying in terms of that legislation to come up with directives and regulations and instructions. I'm not too sure whether that has already been implemented, but we do not currently work, and I'm subject to correction. You would not find statistics that say so many people were charged with trafficking in persons and this was the outcome of it, or how do you detect it. So, I'm again saying subject to correction, and I think my colleagues from who are on the ground will be able to share some information. But if you were to go to Bainbridge in December, 40, you would find a taxi full of children with only the driver being a person. Now then, from looking at it, you would start thinking about this could be human trafficking or this could be trafficking. But because we did not have legislation that would allow us to enforce, it becomes, so maybe I'm running away, but I'm simply put, I'm not too sure whether you will be able to have statistics that show that. And on Well, from Home Affairs, from a person who assisted, the immigration regulations was specific. If you look at what we're talking about currently, we talk about it's going to be cumbersome for a person to be said when you travel with a child, birth certificate and all that. But if you look into time the two, the example that has given us also primarily to try and cap the situation. To say anybody, even if you look at the Children's Act, there's a provision with the Children's Act that says anybody who is traveling with a child, that person must have proof of paternity. To say you are traveling with this child, who is this child to you? In order to cap issues related to human trafficking, issues related to fighting of children. In fact, going a step that to talk about to have issues related to abduction, because as parents, when the love goes out the window, we start using children to fall and to a point where you would even abduct your own children and take the child out of the country. So I'm just saying, but again, perhaps I'm being legalistic in it, but I'm saying what we currently have with the immigration regulation, we need to be reminded that there is an international committee that has established at the presidential level to deal with the unintended consequences of this, of the regulation.
Thanks, Chairperson. Also, John, you're asking Chief Director Legal Services, Home Affairs. I don't know if I need to take off my tie or something out of the conversation. That's how I feel sometimes, I'm not sure. Moses has touched on a lot of the issues about the designation of force going to happen by is done by the Minister of Home Affairs, etc. This is also an issue that's going to be addressed in the BMA bill as to who is going to do it, because currently you sit with a lot of different, but not only ports of entry, they talk about points of entry, which is within the country, with goods are deposited, etc. All of those have been dealt with in the BMA bill. We're also looking at one of the questions that were asked on the new structure and are people going to be taken over, etc. As Mr. Africa has indicated, you want to have a command and control structure. In other words, you're going to have a pyramid. Some of this at the top, it's like I don't want to call it military structure, I think it's too harsh, but that, you know, those are the people that are in control, etc. With one uniform, you don't have different role players, and everybody knows who's reporting to who. And I think that will sort out a lot of things at the border post itself. Just to indicate that the Department of Home Affairs is currently in the process of reviewing its immigration policy. Now, in reviewing the immigration policy, it will also impact on your refugees and your asylum seekers. If you look at the Refugees Act, that will also be amended at the end of the day, because between 80% and 90% of the people that apply for asylum are what we would call or term economic migrants. So cost the system, want to cost the system, and then you've got the issues of Sandela, what's happening in Sandela. People are saying, for instance, because the attorneys at the Bula judgment where the Supreme Court of Appeal said, if somebody cries asylum, you must assist that person. So a person is found in the country, being here for 2, 3, or 4 years, person illegal, taken to Sandela for repatriation purposes or deportation purposes, then they say asylum. And in terms thereof, you have to release that person has to be taken up in the asylum system. So the policy is going to be looking at all those issues as well, and then we'll come up. We're currently busy with a green paper, which will result in a white paper at the end of the day, and then there'll be new legislation that will come out from that chair. Just on the issue, I don't see any women officials or ladies. There is one here, I know. And I promise you there are quite a few that's assisting in the process when we drafted the bill and things like that in the middle of the late evening, so just to take care of it. Moses is on the bill, we were working on the bill. Then on the issue of Moses has spoken to human trafficking, there are other departments that are involved, even when it comes to children as well. Social development is involved. To take care of that, because we can't, for instance, take need of care, social development plays a huge role in that regard as well. She has been spoken of, once again, the
See, I think those are my answers that I have, just in the policy of you.
Yeah.
That's it. Thanks.
No, thank you very much for the response. Is there something or something? Is there something you know that?
It's entirely up to you. I mean, I know there's a long list of questions. If you want to conclude, we can thank you for the responses to your email. Thank you.
Okay, let me give you 3 days.
No, sir, we are very good at taking instructions. But anyway, let me try quickly. So I think the first question asked by the honorable member next to yourself, I think, was a very important question. And I think maybe let us, we become back chair. I think we must speak, because I think the question about what are the benefits of the DNA, I think that's a very important question. We have doubts, obviously we doubt it, but I think we didn't summarize it in a nice, very succinct manner. So I think we will do that, and we will discuss. But Chairperson, we can talk about how management systems will change. We will talk about how we want security to change. We will talk about how information sharing will change. We talk about the fact that in the borderline environment, we as a VMA will take control over infrastructure and not be waiting on another department. So we believe there are a lot of efficiency. There's a duplication of resources right now, and that is a major problem. So as a chairperson, we will come back to that. So I wanted to respond briefly to that issue. Then chairperson, I thought it's important to make a quick comment around resources. And it's a difficult issue. And there are two comments I want to make quickly. One, we have been told by National Treasury, in fact, all government departments have been told that there are no new resources. So everyone has got that message. So in response to that message, at least the one thing that we are saying is that we want to ensure that when we establish the DNA, when the functions move, the resources must also move. There is this principle in public finance management that says resources or funds must follow functions. So when the functions move from home affairs, from SARS, from debt, when all of these things move from health, when they all move to the DMA, we want all the resources to move. So at minimum, that is what we are saying. But Chairperson, I think the one or two members are correct. The DMA needs to be more resources that go beyond that. So I know DJ Penny is looking at that issue. So that's what I wanted to say around the resources. Then Chair, I thought the issue around taxes, it's a difficult issue, but I know the one concern that our colleagues in the security and in the intelligence domain, the concerns that they normally voice, is that the taxes don't only play the conventional innocent role of transporting people. They contaminate and they begin to compromise the security around ports of entry. Because now you all of a sudden find lots of people gathering there, you find trading happening there. It just begins to make the entire area less manageable. So there are a lot of security concerns that arise. But again, Chair, consistent with what we've been saying, the DMA will need to manage issues of security with economic development and the movement of people. So we're going to need to look at those issues very, very carefully. The Minister of Small Business, not Small Business, the Minister responsible for women and children, went to go and visit, I think, was a Bay Bridge recently. And they also were looking at some of these issues. So clearly, I think it's something that we will continue to look at. My colleague has responded to the issue of human trafficking. I must say that I have seen some statistics from the NPA on this, but again, I would be reluctant to speak to that authoritatively. So Chairperson, I want to support your suggestion. When we come back, we'll not only come back with all the other departments, but we'll also make sure that our gender composition is sorted. But the point I want to make is we'll see that we come with some of the information and the statistics that Chairperson, if I can stop there for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure you don't want to lend them. So that we are correct in terms of gender. I think that takes us to the end of this assessment. But to give an understanding that there are things that he has listed up, we would want to see the department implementing some of them. There was one matter which I forgot to mention, which was raised by Benedict, the wellness center. It's important. It's important. It may sound like luck, but it's not luck. If you look at the workload that they need, may not be together tomorrow, but the department must take that into consideration to keep your employees well upset. It will be the wellness or the lifestyle that you mentioned. It's not done that it's important that they need. The issue of the staff, I don't know whether you want to wait for the Board of Management Agency in order to consider the shortage of personnel as they would be. You may want to have a standard format of say if you want to have a Board of Post, how many employees do you need? I think that's one area that you may need to start working on it, even if we're going to have the border relations there because it is important to look at. Those are the issues that I think you must take up, especially the application of the new border policy. We are expecting you to come back to us on that one. What could be processed? What should be done? Is there a question of support to officially support? But it has come to our attention. We expect you to take that up. Thank you very much for the paid attention, and we will see when we do the overview. We will become a